Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Zimmerman with Becker's Hospital Review. Thank you for tuning into the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Nicole Thunder, Director of Health Plan Solution Design, Point Click Care, and Paul Stout, Program Manager, HIE, Quality Improvement, Health Services at LA Care Health Plan. Nicole and Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
So glad to be
here,
Brian.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Absolutely.
Great. So my first question here, I sort of want to maybe frame up the discussion for listeners a little bit. The idea of quality, the word quality, is sort of thrown around a lot in the healthcare industry and has a broad meaning, right? But can you talk about how we should perhaps think about quality in the context of the discussion we're about to have? And Nicole, I'm going to challenge you to do that work for us.
Sure, Brian. I appreciate you turfing that over to me. Quality is defined by, like, I'm going to give you the definition, right, and then talk a little bit about how or why that's important to us. And so quality is defined by the National Academy of Medicine as the degree to which health services for individuals and populations increase the likelihood of desired health outcomes and are consistent with current professional knowledge. I think using quality measures and a quality improvement framework allows healthcare providers to gain insights and improve outcomes through benchmarking. Benchmarking allows us to identify best practices in care, be able to use those best practices, make them consistent and repeatable. And benchmarking can also help us to accurately track quality improvement progress. And so really, like, definition wise, that's kind of what it is and what it means, but how that influences and impacts what's happening in the healthcare space today. It's a monstrous beast to talk about quality and everything that happens to influence or touch what happens on a member or patient journey can lead to some kind of a quality outcome. And so whether that be specific to a disease or a condition, whether that be the experience they have when they're accessing care at a provider's office, using preventative versus reactive types of care in order to drive not only the experience, but the outcome, and therefore then the financials that are tied to that overall experience. I think we're gonna hit on a bunch of those today, and look forward to kind of having that conversation with Paul and kind of garnering some of his experience. So I'll turn it over to him and let him kind of add some color commentary to that very fun definition of quality.
Thank you, Nicole. I think there's a couple of things there that I think we're all trying to do. The end result is, when I used to take care of patients, is their experience make sense for them? I mean, it's scary being sick or not feeling well, or more importantly, being part of a system that's so huge that even with two master's degrees, half the time you're scratching your head. Quality really is ultimately a process that's designed to allow people to be healthy and to stay healthy. And that's my goal. And that's my goal working with Point Click Care. So when we reach out to minorities, people of color, marginalized populations, but more importantly, just humans, and trying to give them dignity by giving them some authority in what they're trying to do. So quality allows us to apply metrics to see what our success rates are and where our gaps in health participation are. And so as a payer, being that I'm part of an LA County nonprofit, but more importantly, when I used to be a provider, I always wanted the best for my patients. But sometimes my patients aren't empowered with knowledge. And with the new rules that are coming out, we work very closely with Point Click Care to design things to help physicians, pharmacists, nurses, social workers, mental health specialists to really work collaboratively together. And I think ultimately, that's all of our goals.
Thank you both so much there. And Paul, you really talked about sort of, you know, that knowledge being key to driving outcomes and driving quality. So can you talk more about that? You know, what information do you think is really necessary to be able to share sort of across the continuum of care to really drive outcomes and quality care?
Well, that's a great point. So information comes in a couple of different ways. You have a trifecta, I like this, actually a tertiary of care, right? So you have the hospital or the clinic, you have the physician, you have the payer or the health plan. And more importantly, the most important part is you have the patient. So how do you share that information? Is the information digestible? If you, for example, are a hardworking mom of three who's got two jobs trying to hold it down and you get a report that says hypoglycemic condition with an elevated A1C, are you automatically expected to understand what that impact is on you and how it's going to affect your family? No, you're not. So that's why we involve other people in that group to help you understand that. The payer would provide additional resources that are incorporated within the plan that you might be involved in. So, for example, transportation resources if you lost your car, housing resources if you're recently homeless, a social worker to help you find what state and federal and county programs are available. Half these programs are rarely used because people don't even know they exist. It's a presumption that everybody knows that every single program's out there. That's ridiculous. These people are just trying to figure out how to get to the supermarket to put food on the table in some cases. Some folks are new to this country, and as a consequence, they don't have the language. So, for example, if they see it written, it doesn't necessarily make sense to them. We don't know what their cultural educational background is. So information is a way to level the playing field, to give empowerment to individuals to use resources as they see it, right? So we want people to really feel that they're in control, because being sick, that's the last thing you're in control of. So you want to help them help themselves by managing it in a way that they feel comfortable. There are cultures to consider. There are ways of approaching. Some of these folks, they just want to be good and they just want to be better and they don't want to deal with the details. So how do we do that? And I think information sharing can be a complex question, but the result is simple. How do we empower the patient to be successful?
Thank you, Paul. Really, really appreciate that. Nicole, I'm curious what you would have to say on this one as well. You know, what from your perspective, what information is really necessary to spread across the continuum and help people sort of navigate this environment?
I can't appreciate enough. The first thing that came to mind was that kind of patient or member or person, human-centered piece of information that Paul talked about. Really having an understanding and appreciation for what this means in this kind of big, scary beast of healthcare. And especially to Paul's point, when you're not feeling well, when there's a trauma, when there's something difficult in crisis, this is the time, right, to be able to not have to repeat your story 100 times to 50 different people who are trying to help you. Really being able to normalize and push that important information out to those that need to know it in order to be the most effective in helping to support you, and making things actionable. And so there's one thing to say, we know that here's the 7,000 people that you saw at your ED today who all have diabetes, but what is the actual action that needs to take place in order to help that particular person? We believe that, right, that curating and normalizing the information in a way that becomes digestible and forces action is really what helps to change kind of that clinical experience and therefore hopefully the clinical outcome. And so that's a combination of how it is received by not only the providers and those that are on the care team, but then how they can help to then relay that back to the patient. And so making sure that there's some standardization in the understanding of who's on first, how we're going to help, and what that actually means from an action perspective can change the game here. And I think that's really, you know, highlights what Paul talked about and really helps us to be able to change the care continuum to be this kind of well-oiled machine that works together versus a machine that is fighting each other in order to be able to do the right thing and make people, again, feel better, get as healthy as possible, and be proactive in that mission.
Hey, Nicole, I want to segue off this. I think this is a great, if I may, Brian, I think there's something that I think is important to share here. So Nicole and I, a year and a half ago, worked on a cohort for pediatric asthma. And I worked with Gabe and a few other people. And I want to tell the story because it still brings a tear to my eye just thinking about it. So we all sat around strategizing in our big, comfortable corporate offices about how we can help people be successful. And I said, hey, what about people who don't speak our language that are part of my plan? How do we help them understand that something's going on? So we had a patient who was approximately 7 or 8 years old at the time, who was going to the ER frequently between the hours of 6 and 9 o'clock at night, 3-4 times a month. And we were just curious as to why that happened. Now, they were never previously diagnosed with anything. They weren't a part of any healthcare consortium. His mom was working two jobs to put food on the table. I mean, they talk about a hero. And what we were able to do is we were able to take the information from the ER visits, because she'd go to the ER closest to wherever she happened to be sent for her daily work, I'm not sure which, I believe she worked in the service industry and she went to multiple locations. And we noticed that they were going to multiple hospitals. None of them were connecting. Point Click Care was connected to all of them. And I was able to spot that using this cohort and then help the mom's primary care physician who had not even been aware that that patient had been in the ER. And they brought that child in who talked to a physician who spoke his language and talked to the mom and said, hey, let's do a couple of tests. It turns out this patient, this young man, had asthma, and they were able to treat it with a simple inhaler that he got from the pharmacy that was able to be gotten that day. And from then on, that poor mother, who was working 12 to 13 hours a day, 6 days a week, didn't have to come home to a child who could barely breathe. The terror that woman must have been going through for so long, and we did that together. That is a very real thing, and we were able to help 100-plus children do the same thing. That is real, and that is the work that we've done, and we have more things we're doing. So that's where the information comes together. That's where quality comes together. That's where people like Nicole and I hail from Stanford. She was a social worker. We all are here for one reason, to make life better for our fellow communities, and we take that very seriously, and we were able to do that, and that's some work I'm very proud of with her.
Paul, I really appreciate you sharing that. And really, I think you've both done a wonderful job at sort of really detailing the human experience that's involved here. But Paul, I want to ask you a follow-up question, because you mentioned you're through this sort of exercise of information sharing, you're able to influence the lives of hundreds of kids. And I'm curious, how prevalent do you think some of these sort of care issues are around the industry? When you talk about sort of the disjointed information sharing problems the industry has, do you think there's so much more progress that can be made here through better information sharing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a couple of ways of different doing it. First of all, when you have a very expensive healthcare, for example, and you spend thousands and thousands of dollars a month, you know, they have all these concierge programs. Well, guess what? It's not exclusive to people with super expensive plans. Medicare and CMS provide the very same services nobody even knows about. Well, how are we going to communicate that? Through this type of system. We can put in care guidelines into Point Click Care that sends out information that every time a patient goes to the ER, that they have a whole care team that's ready and willing to work with them. Here are the phone numbers to call. There's no searching required. There is a, hey, look, send us a notification. We automatically get that notification. We have a member that's been in the ER 7 times in a week. There's something going on. They happen to have an undiagnosed hypoglycemic issue that is affecting their judgment. People don't realize that sometimes when you have mental health issues, you usually have more than one thing affecting you, what they call a complex comorbidity, meaning that your judgment can be affected if you have an imbalance. Your judgment can be affected, when you have a hypoglycemic issue. So we're able to put other people to put their hand on their shoulder collectively and say, we've got you. And we can do this through interspersed, unconnected systems with Point Click Care. We can see the continuum from the clinic all the way to the the step down unit or the long-term care facility. We can see full spectrum data. And we can see that in a way that we can see a discharge plan. Do you have any idea how rare it is for a physician, a primary care physician, to even get those plans? How many steps they have to go through with their overworked staff just to see that information? So they have to guess. And they have to guess based on partial information, based on information that they're getting from a patient who may not even understand what's even going on with them. We're able to provide a continuum of care where, like other healthcare plans where everything's connected and all the hospitals and clinics are part of the same system, they can see that at the touch of the fingers. Well, Point Click Care exists is in an area where there are not connected plans, they are not connected hospitals, and they are not connected clinics, but we still give them the same level of care because we're here day in and day out. I've been on the phone late with Nicole solving problems because she cares about the patients, and we take that very seriously. And so I think that's, I hope that answers your question.
It certainly does, Paul. I appreciate it. And Nicole, we're coming close on time, but I certainly want to focus in here and talk for a bit about alternative payment models and just sort of how the mechanics of those and how they work. So, Nicole, how do these payment models work? Sort of thinking here about incentives and pay for performance and all those various aspects here. And what do these models sort of essentially mean for the broader healthcare ecosystem. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I'll jumpstart this, but I really appreciate kind of Paul's approach here. And right, and coming from the payer space, really hope he can help me to punctuate right what this means to the ecosystem, specifically the one that he works and plays in all day. There are all kinds of ways in which the healthcare system works. And it's really about ensuring that there is the financial backing to not only keep the lights on, right, but to invest and innovate in a way that drives to some of the outcomes that we're talking about. And some of these, right, are pay for performance and the ability to drive incentives for meeting some of those quality metrics that we had talked about in the beginning. And so it's really about being able to set up arrangements, right, with these different care providers to understand, right, what the outcomes are that are expected, how to help to monitor and measure their own performance, and what that means for the population of people or their patient panel that's attributed to them where they're responsible for care. And so being able to parse through some of the details, and we're talking about large amounts of information here, right? We're talking about different data points, and we've given a handful of examples, but really trying to curate metrics that are specific to a provider and a group of patients can be very cumbersome. And so it's really about being able to hone in on those specifics and drive that patient-centered activity that helps to get to the best outcomes, and really being able to then share in the savings or use those incentives, right, in order to, and I'm going to say, right, level up at the provider level in order to support the best practices and the really good work that's happening, and really be able to kind of move that through as it relates to not just the clinical and quality outcomes that we're all looking for, but helping them, right, to invest in some of this more collaborative and streamlined data sharing, the ability to be able to drive those best practices, be able to invest in their clinics and the community in a way that drives some of these outcomes. So I think that's kind of just a broad brush look at how these models sit. But Paul, I would love for you to talk to us a little bit about some of your experience, things that work and maybe things that don't.
Well, I'm very anecdotal, so let me respond with this. I have some good friends that are physicians that work with me at LA Care, Dr. Alex Lee, Dr. Katrina Parrish, Dr. James Kyle, Dr. Seidman, and they've all worked in the Los Angeles community area. And I tell you, as somebody who is trying to do the best for their patients, but they have limited staff, how do we best impact that practice? Well, we say, there's so many different areas to choose from. It's overwhelming. Pick one area. Let's concentrate on that and make steps. And when those steps are accomplished, we're going to help incentivize you because those patients are being seen less in the hospital, which is less of a financial drain on the system, not because they're not getting care, but actually they're getting such good care, they don't need to go to the hospital. So guess what? We have money now. What are we going to do with that? We're going to give it back to you, physician. We're going to give it back to you, care practice, so you can hire more staff to find another thing that you can be really good at. So not just one now, two, then three, then so on and so forth. Then you have the staff to really be that physician where you know your patients are being well cared for. People forget that it is a long day in a healthcare office and there are so many patients coming through. And a physician is just one person, but there's a community out there. And by providing them with incentives, we're not saying, oh, if you do a good job, we'll pay you better. We're saying, hey, congratulations on the effort that you put in using technology we're providing for you. Let's help you be more successful by giving you a couple of measures that you can concentrate on. And we're going to be watching. And the second you reach that finish line, we're going to recognize you at an award ceremony. We're going to make sure you get a bonus check so you can hire the staff you need to get that new equipment to take care of your patients, because we're all in it together. Rather than, because, you know, what's the alternative? Well, if you're not spending the money, where does that money go? Well, oh, gee, it's a profit center, right? No, not for us. For us, we reinvest that in our community. We have huge programs that help hire and train new physicians for Los Angeles County. We have money that we put into programs like Point Click Care that are able to reach out to these clinics and give these physicians the tools that they can monitor their success using very measurable, very achievable goals. And the second they're there, we're there cheering them on the finish line. And that is how it works. Give these people power. Everybody seems to think that a physician goes out there, they have infinite amount of resources, all the equipment they ever want, it's all brand new, and they have all the staff. That is not reality. And more importantly, in minority and underserved populations, it's the opposite that's true. They're working off a 20-year-old system or law or older, barely working equipment, and they need desperately to get those funds so they can do a better job. And we're here for them. And that's why we do this. It is a privilege to be a part of a system where Nicole and I work together to help these people get that money that they can invest in their clinics so they can help even more people. I mean, ultimately, it's altruistic, but it's the truth.
Thank you, Paul. And thank you, Nicole, both. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you today. And I have one final question for each of you. And after our conversation, it might sound a little obvious, but I do want to ask before we close, why are you so passionate about this? Paul, maybe we can start with you.
Honestly, it's the patients. And it's the patients and trying to help them be in control of areas of their lives that they were otherwise out of control of, and to make their families' lives better, because it's not just the patient, it's the whole family, it's the community, being a part of a place to elevation. And the success stories of the cohorts I shared with you are all important. And I think that that's why I do it, and that's why I'm so passionate.
Thank you, Paul. Nicole, how about you?
The conversation that we've had today, right, and just being able to be on a phone call with someone like Paul, right, it's like infectious. It's hard not to be passionate, right, about some of these things when you have conversations like this. But for me, really, it is a growing up and going through school, right, knowing that social work was my space, right, like that traditional practicing social work was like not my niche, right? Like I wasn't good at it. I didn't get it, right? But this like business side of the components of healthcare transformation, making things available to everyone who needs them, being cognizant, right, of what's necessary in order to support these kind of clinical outcomes, replicating best practices, having experiences, right, that are positive, where people feel good, feel healthy, have access to the care that they need and understand how to do it themselves. All of those things continue to keep me coming back. And so working with organizations like LA Care and people like Paul, right, it does continue to, it just feeds your soul, right, and allows the opportunity for us to hopefully help to influence and impact the communities, right, which we live and serve. And so we're both so very fortunate to work together and be in this space.
Well, I also have one other thing I'd like to add, too. When I used to work on patients, it was one at a time. Now I work on millions at a time, and I influence not just a patient's outcome, but an entire community's. I mean, that is, I think, what Nicole was getting at, is that we are so much more effective on a larger scale to really influence the culture of healthcare, which really needs to change.
Perfect place to end. Nicole and Paul, the passion is certainly infectious. It really was a pleasure speaking with both of you today.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We also want to thank our podcast sponsor, Point Click Care. You can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.